Hey, what you waiting on? Check, checkers on your phone. This the Tony Sands Show. Turn your radio on. Chelsea just turned down like a field goal, so we in the zone. Got games like a stadium. I'ma go ahead and pack the dome. I'm cooler, smoother. Make you think with your medulla. You a student. I'ma school you with the facts that I'm producing. This is for the high schoolers, college students. Nah, everyone can do it. Do this. I ain't new to this. My style is rich. It's lucrative. Maneuver through it. You know it's fashion. You know it's so sensational. Like my big homie Tony. You could catch me every Monday at the kickoff on Sunday. I got these cold hard facts and we ain't talking Sundays. Co-host with Kelly Daly. Shout out to the big homie. You know it's so sensational. Like my big homie Tony. Co-hosting with Kelly Daly. You know it's facts only. You know I'm so sensational. Like my big homie Tony. Tony, Tony, Tony. Go BBS Radio. Only in
Oakland. Dallas Carter, 1888.
The team you don't remember from Friday Night Lights.
The greatest high school team that has ever been assembled. Ever. You're walking through the mall and people are asking you for your autograph.
We were 18-year-old movie stars.
We're like the princes of the city. There was nowhere you couldn't go.
Rules, they didn't apply to me.
When you that good and you All-American,
you could do anything.
I started thinking I was bigger and beyond the law.
People came to me and I didn't know that your son would do something like that. I didn't know either.
We created an environment that Texas high school football players, if they don't have it, they're gonna take it.
It was heartbreaking. They'd thrown away everything that they did.
We're live here on the Tony Sands Show, another week of knowledge being put into the minds of those that are watching the show. Listen, this week, I went deep because I feel our community needs this information is what's going on. They need to hear, especially our athletes and even non-athletes. This story here touched me from the time I saw it. I was around the story. I had been to a couple of the games. Dallas Carter High School, as you heard LaDamian said, was one of the best assembled high school teams ever to be assembled. And I'm going to tell you, I got one of the main guys from Carter lost 30 for 30. You got to figure, they was in the midst of the season of Friday Night Lights, and he was doing his thing. When I say doing his thing, welcome to the Tony Sands Show, Mr. DF. What's going on, my brother?
Sorry, Tony, man. Thanks for having me.
Listen, man. Listen, we touched bases a year ago, yeah, January, right, to get you on, man. And we said we would work it out. And I call you back and say, yeah, man, I would love to come on. As time goes, a lot of things happen at Dallas Carter. A lot of things happen at Dallas Carter High School. When you look back over things that took place at Dallas Carter and you look at what you guys were able to accomplish, man. It was unbelievable. What, here you are, an athlete, what made you want to choose to go to Dallas Carter High School?
As a kid, that's all you knew. That's all you knew was Dallas Carter. You know, my oldest brother, you know, he kind of started the legacy for me. Okay. You know, he was all metro, all district, both ways, offensive player and a defensive player. Then a lot of guys that he played with, Chet Brooks, who was a Super Bowl champion with the San Francisco 49ers. Watching those guys from freshman all up to being seniors, you know, that was just your dream. I mean, every Friday night, you couldn't wait to go to the car, just sit down and just watch.
You guys were selling out stadiums like Texas State, North Texas. You guys, these are think of football here in South Florida, and we love our football.
Right.
What level of love for football in Texas, period?
It's unprecedented. I mean, it's gold. I mean, the towns and cities literally shut down on Friday nights. I mean, no gas stations, no convenience stores. I mean, everybody's at the game. You know, everybody's at the game. I mean, it's just a sight to see, and then there's so much you get tired of just reading about them in the newspaper and seeing them on the news on Fridays and Saturday nights. So you actually want to just, hey, pack the car up and just go out there and just see those kids do their thing out there.
Now, here you go. You entered Dallas Carter as a freshman. What was it like now you get a chance to put on a Dallas Carter uniform?
Man, our freshman year, people started telling us when we were they told us at 14 years old, man. And there was a guy named Darren Tank Lewis. You know, Darren Tank Lewis, he's running back outside of Barry Sanders to me. You know, I mean, he came out the same year as Emmitt Smith. He was ranked ahead of us. That's how good this guy was. And just people started telling me that I was going to be better than him. And I was like, no, I ain't going to be better than Tank. Ain't nobody going to be better than Tank. But what it was, you know, as freshmen, when you walk through that back door, I mean, hey, you got to state your business right there. I mean, because the first day in pads, the freshmen go against the junior varsity, the very first day, you know, and people don't know this, but during tour days and during the summertime, the junior varsity is the best team at Carter High School because all those thugs that don't play football but were the little league legends and all the dope guys who they can't play football because they're ineligible. But during the summer, school hadn't started. So they're out there. And, man, hey, and it was serious. It was serious. And so right there, you had to check your hat at the door. Had to check that ego at the door, you know. And all the guys that when we got to Carter, I either played with them or against them in little league and junior high. I mean, so I knew everybody's talent, you know, everybody's mindset. So, you know, we just kind of, you know, we had to check our ego as well. You know, so we just kind of checked our egos at the door, and hey, and we just kind of gelled together and made it happen.
When you're freshman, did you automatically go and play varsity, or did you have to work your way up to it? Because you said freshman. Right. So do you have to play freshman, junior varsity, and then varsity, or was you able to make jumps?
At Carter, you'll never see a freshman on varsity because there's just way too much talent, too much talent now. Great, great sophomores, they go to varsity.
Okay.
But I didn't make the varsity my sophomore year because of Darren Tank Lewis. You know, because back then, I was like, everybody looked at me as the next, you know, best thing at tailback. And by him being the number one and back in the United States, you know, actually, junior varsity coach was like, no, you can't put Edwards on varsity because I need somebody. You know, so that's how I ended up playing junior varsity. I mean, but my whole team, all the parents, everybody's parents, they knew that I was a shoe-in for varsity after my freshman season because I led the team in every statistical category, tackles, sacks, interceptions, rushing, scoring, everything except passing and receiving. I didn't lead it that because I didn't do those things.
Now you talk about, you know, it's unorthodox for a freshman to make varsity. You get into your sophomore year, and how's everything going at that point, at Carter?
I was really ticked off. You know, my whole sophomore year, I was ticked off because everybody that started with me as freshman, they were on varsity. Our whole ball, everybody that started on both sides of the ball, everybody went to varsity except me. So I was just down there by myself. I felt all alone. You know, I felt, and knowing I was the best player on our freshman team.
You couldn't go up because you had a guy that was
dog
in front of you.
Right.
So it was tougher for you to go up. Now, what year did he leave?
Darren left. He went to Texas A&M in 1987.
So then now we getting into your junior.
Right. Yeah. And my junior year, it didn't go the way that I thought it was going to go. And I say that because my head coach, Freddie James, he wanted to use me like he used Darren Lewis. Okay. We were two different types of backs.
Okay.
You know, Darren, you can give him the ball 20, 30, 40 times a game. You know, I only need 12 to 18 touches. Give me 12 to 18 touches. I'm going to get you between 150 and 350.
Okay. You said give me 12.
That's all I need.
To 15.
That's all I need.
And you're going to get, you know, I guess I'm bothering you. But see, listen, I used to tell people, listen, just give it to me. Yeah. I'm used to carrying the ball 30 times. Give it to me. I want to, listen, I want to be able to eat. When I leave, I want to know that I've rushed for over 200 yards. But you were saying give you 12 and you'll get it done. You was getting
I'm
it,
gonna
done
get it done. I'm going to get it done. And then we had so much talent. We had so much talent. I've never been the type of player that I wanted all the glory.
Okay.
I never need it. I mean, because, you know, man, I'm going to get mine. I want you to get yours. I want everybody to get theirs. Yes. You, okay. You know, I mean, yes. That's less wear and tear on my body.
You, like I said, you in your junior year, what was you guys' record at that time? Because you got to remember now, prior to you guys, Dallas hadn't won a state championship.
Right.
But they was slotted a lot of times to win the state championship, but got derailed along the way. Was you a part of that group to where your junior or your sophomore year, you guys got derailed when you should have won one of the games?
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, it was either one thing or another. Like my sophomore year, okay. You know, that they put him up the varsity for the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. Sophomore year, our flanker got hurt. You know, I mean, that was Darren Lewis' best friend. That was like yin and yang, you know.
Okay.
And he got hurt, so that's how we end up losing that year. And then my junior year, actually, we should have won state probably our junior year, but our head coach, he believed, I mean, in getting kids in college. You know, that was his thing. And we had a two-man horse at quarterback. You know, had a guy named Cedric Smith, who was the senior, mm-hmm. and then our quarterback, Robert Hall. Mm-hmm. And so he allowed Cedric to play more than I think he should have. And that's where we kind of had the downfall. We ended up losing my junior year in the playoffs, 9-7.
Each one of those losses of those years, were you guys more talented than the team that you played up against?
Definitely.
So it just pretty much came to one year. You say a guy was hurt. Was you know, sometimes when you got a lot of that talent, guys don't gel with it. Was any of that in the playoffs, just say, listen, some things happened. We didn't stay focused enough to get the job done.
I don't think so. A lot of guys kind of would get down, you know, sometimes, and you know, everybody doesn't handle adversity the same, you know, so everybody doesn't have that thick skin. And I think that was one of the things that propelled us my senior year to the state championship.
And you talk about your senior, this is a lot of it that went on around Dallas. You guys going in, okay, you come out of your junior year, you guys came up a little short of a state championship, and you guys are talented across the board.
Right.
When I say talented across the board, it was really, when you look at y'all team, probably more than 50 guys will, you know, at some point would have signed Division I scholarship. Let's get into your senior year. You're in spring, y'all. You guys are getting into the spring prior to the senior year. You're coming out your junior year, getting ready. What was spring ball like? What was your guys' focus?
Man, competitive. We were so focused that, well, actually, after we lost that game, our junior year to North Mesquite 9-7, it was mostly us that were juniors. We sat at the back of the bus, and we got on the bus, and we seen the seniors crying. We saw tears streaming down their faces because that was it for most of them. And we said, we're not going to have that feeling. We said, we will not have that feeling right there. I mean, and right then, we all just kind of sat down. We actually had a meeting, a players-only meeting, you know. And we said, man, but Jesse Armstead, who was our captain, his thing was, man, we're going to be seniors. And we're not going to let nobody the same age as us whoop us. He said, ain't nobody that guy that's in front of you, he can't be older than you because we seniors. We're not going to let anybody beat us, man. And, man, we just, that's just what we wanted to do, man. We wanted to be the best ever.
Talk about leadership. What was his leadership like to getting that team really focused in? Because, of course, once you guys – make him a captain. That means you guys believe in what he was saying to you.
Yeah, you know, Jesse was a different dude, man. You know, he was really a different dude and a great leader.
Okay.
You know, he believed in like all that nonsense, all that plan and practice. He didn't believe in that. Matter of fact, while we were in the playoffs, he and I kind of got into it. I was kind of lackadaisical in cornerback, and one of the junior varsity guys, you know, he catch a long bomb on me for a touchdown.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I'm walking back to the huddle regular, you know, man, that dude grabbed my face mask and slung, so I grabbed him. So we just kind of had some little scuffle,
yeah,
you know, but I knew why he did it. You know what I mean? Because it's business, you know, and we felt like we had unfinished business.
That,
you know?
Come out of spring, you're getting ready to go into summer camp. You talk about how you guys staying focused. Everybody is focused on the task because you saw what happened to the seniors prior, and you didn't want that taste in your mouth.
Right.
You're going to your first game of your season in your senior year. What was your expectations like for you, and where did you want to see yourself at the end of that season?
I mean, I'm going to go back a step backwards.
Go ahead.
You know, during that summer, leading up to our senior season, we called mandatory practice. Mandatory players only practice.
Okay.
You had to be there or you wasn't going to be on the team. And that's just how it was. We're talking like you had to have that dedication because that's what we wanted. I mean, we knew that we were good. And we would be the first state championship team out of Dallas Independent School District. And we just work hard.
You talk about Dallas Independent School District. Because there's a lot of things that go on around. You got to think of 1968, that school was all white. There wasn't a black on the football team.
Right.
And then we come to 1980, and there's not even a white on the team. And that school has become predominantly African-American. You guys are in practice. And what was it like for you getting ready to go into your senior year? You guys had great success in the junior. What was it like walking the halls?
I mean, we literally ran the whole city. It's crazy, but to see some 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old kids, I mean, when we went into Redbird Mall, I mean, they would even good. You know, if I wanted to give me something to eat, tennis shoes, clothes, I mean, my money wasn't just the way that they looked at us. And that's the pedestal that they kind of set us on.
You get into, like I said, you're in the senior year, you're in the senior year, you guys are getting ready for that first game to just really set the precedent. What was that for you getting ready, going out in the tunnel?
You know what? That it was so much adrenaline. I mean, I was dehydrated. Because that game, but then our first two games, you know, I never came off the field. I mean, I never came off the field. Every special team, I played a cornerback and running back. So for me, you know, I was just tired. I mean, I got one way. That's 100%. You know, I do everything one way, man. And so, and like I said, after the game, I was dehydrated. I was throwing up, heaving, just dry heaving, you know, all the way back to Dallas because we actually played them in John Tyler. You know, so I can sit at the, you know, with my partners and have fun because I'm dry heaving all the way down the freeway, you know.
And now things started rolling in the way that you guys envisioned.
You know what, man? It a lot of people didn't understand that, but our games were during the week. Now, our games were during the week.
Elaborate.
Practice was on Friday nights.
Oh,
the guys over there, they weren't close to us. They weren't close to you. Your task is going to be in practice going against that cat right in front of you. And that's just the way we looked at it. And then on game day, we it was just formality. You know,
We're going to play the game all the week. Now we're going out here to solidify everything. You guys, okay, midway during your senior year, you guys are, like I said, you guys are rolling. You guys getting the momentum of Christ. Everybody in the town is feeling Dallas Carter. You guys get ready to now. You go into your playoffs. Get ready to go into the playoffs. Two Fargo. And state that you, you know, hey, listen, we got an issue with Dallas. They say they had an academic issue with Dallas Carter High School. Did you realize that that same issue was your issue?
You know what? Everything about it.
Correct.
Matter of fact, the coaches didn't even tell us anything. Uh-huh. We were out there for practice, and he just walked up and said, hey, y'all go to the house. I'll call y'all later on. Before I made it home, my girlfriend's had already called me at the house and left me a message. So I checked the message as soon as I got home, and then my dad got home, and my dad said, situation that they're talking about, that sounds like our situation. And I said, well, what's going on when you transferred from that one algebra class to the other? I said, okay, yeah, no, that's our situation. And so I'm like, what the hell? You know, see, I mean, because I'm a A and B student, straight A and B student, you know, so I'm like, no, can't be me. You know, we've already gotten our report card. Yes. I went grabbed all my report cards my whole life. I kept them up under my mattress, right? So I just went, flipped the mattress. I got every report card I ever had in my life. And so now, Dad, here go on my report card.
The one grid, I think it was 70. I think it was already a 72 on the report card.
Right. 72 was actually on the report card. And they were saying that, well, the one of the algebra teachers was saying that I failed.
That was
Mr. Bates. We found out that he was a big Plano booster. You know,
Okay. And
Plano had won the state championship the previous 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
You guys feel like, and I know, you know, that this kind of was orchestrated, because why did they wait all the way up until the playoff?
It was that year. I mean, y'all would have had to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, we had so many people come up to our practices just looking. I mean, and I'm not talking about black. You know, white folk coming up in Oak Cliff, Texas, hanging out on the fence, looking at some young black dudes, saying, man, that was different. And I mean, cause, and we didn't always know the angle in which they were, you know, coming at us.
Like I said, what was it like while this was going on before? How many scouts were actually on you guys' sideline?
We can talk to them. We can talk to them at a time, you know, and I mean, but every scout in the United States was at Dallas Carter. I mean, everybody. I mean, you know, back then, you know, the big time guys was Jimmy Johnson, Jackie Sherrill, and R.C. Slocum. Of course, Cam that recruited us. Barry Switzer. Joe Paterno. They were all there. When I say there, they had to physically come back then.
Right. You know, come and see you.
They had to be standing on that sideline.
Correct.
So, you know.
So you guys, like I said, you got a sideline full of who of who's right. are coming to watch Dallas Carter High School.
Right.
You guys are in the midst of your getting ready. Right. Thought you was getting ready for the playoffs.
Right.
Coach Senior Home, you and your dad getting together, and they find out that this academic issue lied in your hands. How did you feel when you saw your team the next day?
It wasn't no next day. It was right then. I mean, we had a meeting at the local elementary school. You know, all the parents were there. I mean, you're talking about, it's 7:00 at night, you know, and every parent, every kid is there. And so it was weird because when I walked in, you know, everybody was already there. You know, everybody was already there. And so when I walked in, I was like, God, you know, I felt like everybody was looking at me, you know, because, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, man, this is shit. So I just said it at the back. You know, I said, nah, man, because go up there, then, man, the cheerleaders start standing up, calling my name, no, come up here, come up here. So And I had to just endure that walk of shame, you know, down that. I'm like, damn, man, I done let this whole team down, you know. And so, but you know, I never heard one negative thing about me, you know, from any of my coaches, any of the student body, from my teammates or anything, you know. So that was, you know, a reassurance for me that they actually believed in me.
Now, and like you said, walked in this room, hello, everybody. And I know how inner city black schools,
yeah,
when it comes to them, especially with football, yeah, and something go wrong,
yeah,
everybody in the whole community is sitting at that meeting. So what things said throughout the meeting? What are some of the things that have been said throughout that meeting, you know, for those that wasn't in the room?
During that meeting, the main thing that they were really concerned with was getting a temporary injunction, you know, so that we could continue playing, you know. And then, of course, you know, they all the lawyers and the school board members, you know, I'm 17 years old, man. I'm in a room with all them by myself. Yeah. You know, it's like, and they got the lights, the newspapers in there, everything. So I'm like, God damn. So they grilling me.
Yeah.
I'm about, hey, you know, did you flunk this class? Did you change your report card? You know, they going on and on. I try to tell them, I say, man, look, I looked at everybody in that room. I say, somebody didn't do their homework. Okay. I say, because you're talking about an A and B student, you know. I said, I'm in three editions of Who's Who Among American High School Students. You know, I'm in Names and Faces of High School Students. I mean, any academic, I was a Scholastic All-American. That's academic, you know, and here you are trying to say that I'm a dunce, you know, but one of my friends was told me, she said, Garrett, she said, they had to get the best player on the team. They said, but they don't know that you're a child of God and that you're going to come out this smelling like a rose. You know, and I looked at her, you know, and she just hugged me and tears coming down her face. That made tears come down my face, you know, yes. And I'm like, God, man. I said, man. But just at that time, to see that Oak Cliff community come together, it wasn't just Dallas Carter. It was Oak Cliff.
So I heard they say,
yeah,
school, it was everybody in that
my geometry teacher told me, I was in class one day. She said, baby, do you know that you the only person who done ever brought Oak Cliff together? She said, you the only person who done ever, ever done that. Yeah, brought the whole entire city together. All right, you know, but it
What was your dad? What you and your dad, and, you know, you and your dad, when you left that meeting, you felt, did you feel better going, leaving the meeting than going into the meeting?
No, I felt the same, man. Right. At the time, I felt like I let the whole community down. I let my teammates down, my parents, because I knew we had a chance. Yes. I knew we had a chance at history. You know, and I said, man, I done messed up everything, everybody, you know. I mean, I didn't want to talk to the partners, you know what I'm saying? I didn't want to hang out, you know, because, you know, it was always there. You know, I couldn't watch TV. I mean, I'm on every news station. I'm in every magazine. I'm in everything, man. And so, you know, I it got to the point to where I didn't really want to watch it. You know how you get fed up with yourself, you know. I was fed up with me. You know, I didn't want to see me anywhere, you know.
And then you guys get the injunction.
Right.
Get the injunction.
Right.
You play one game.
Right.
And then I think they speak of you guys were on the bus to get ready to play the next game, and you had to come off the bus because they had done reinstated.
That happened 3 weeks in a row.
3 weeks in a row?
Our first playoff game. Well, actually, we were supposed to play it on the Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And they was like, nah, y'all ain't playing. So we were on the bus.
So y'all was on the bus,
yeah,
ready to go.
We were on the bus, about to take off. Coach James walked out there real slow and was like, man, y'all go home and we gonna call y'all. You know, and so everybody got off the bus, went home. Then they actually called us back to the school, telling me, nah, we gonna play tonight. But by that time, it was already, you know, 9 o'clock. So they said, nah, they rescheduled the game Saturday. You know, so we end up playing, but man, our game didn't get over till it was like midnight. You know, because they bumped the other game up to 6. And then they had to play that hole. And then they went into – they had a shootout. They went into, I think, triple overtime. You know, yeah, they went into triple overtime. So our game – yeah, they kept putting us back. So, man, we out there – and it's damn near midnight, man. We out there trying to play football.
Now, you guys have that feeling. Okay, you're in the tunnel.
Right.
You guys are getting ready. You feel like the whole world outside of Oak Cliff is against you.
Right.
But before you got, it was a chant that you guys created. Yeah. Yeah. What, who, and what made you guys come up with that chant?
Hey, man. It was Dallas Carter against the world, man. So one of the little old guys I was telling about earlier that didn't play football, just a fool, you know, and he said, fuck these hoes. And that was our chant.
The way y'all said it.
Nobody knew
what you were saying.
Yeah.
It's almost as if y'all were speaking encrypted language.
Yes.
The only people know about it was you guys.
Yeah, nobody but the team. Even our coaches couldn't figure it out, because when you got 60, 70 guys saying something, it's not going to come out like that, you know.
Right.
So
right.
People thought we were saying Oreos. People thought we were saying Fuddy-O's. But then, because our coaches were like, they would get so into it, they were saying Fuddy-O. Then they got close enough and say, wait a minute, what the hell y'all saying? Because we saying fuck these up. And so they told us to stop saying that. But hey, man,
what was his expression when he realized what he was saying?
Man, they all just kind of ran towards, said, y'all be quiet. And say, man, we didn't stop.
Y'all continue each time coming out.
I mean, you got to understand, the whole stadium was saying it.
Right.
Our whole sideline was saying it. Yeah, it wasn't just the player. You know, it was.
Y'all had to bought into it.
Right.
Now, you guys get the injunction. We get to the state championship game. Now, you know, once you guys were in the state championship, did you guys run into that issue again?
No.
That was they going to not let you play? Was they going to let you play it?
No. It went, like I say, 3 weeks. It was like that. And then the other three games was kind of just, hey, man, we lost. We don't want nothing to do with it, you know?
Yeah, we lost.
Right.
Let them keep going. Let them roll it out. And you guys get in the state championship game. Now, it was one of those, I don't know if it was a state championship game, you say you felt that y'all was in this situation because of you.
Right.
And coach said, he was going to give you the ball.
That was actually our first playoff game.
Uh-huh.
Our first playoff game against Plano East. You know, that it was fourth quarter, 3 minutes, 21 seconds left, man. And the score was tied 7-7. And I'm sitting on the sideline, not on a knee, and me and Jesse's right next to me. And so Robert Hall actually threw a long bomb to a friend of mine, Marcus Grant. You know, so Marcus Grant caught the bomb, and so Jesse looked at me, tapped me, said, man, you got us in this shit, now go get us out. You know, I didn't look at my coach. I just ran out on the field. I mean, they was going to call me anyway, you know, so they gave him the ball, scored a touchdown. I mean, but from that, in that game, the final 3 minutes and 23 seconds, it was all me. I scored two touchdowns. I had interceptions. Broke up three passes, and I broke their star running back's ribs. I made every single play. 3 minutes, 23 seconds. I made every single play that there was to be made. So,
guys, win the state championship.
Right.
First time ever for a Dallas Carter High School to win the state championship. Win that. You guys are on a high.
Right.
You guys on the highest level of y'all was technically y'all was probably bigger than the Dallas Cowboys at 88 because the Dallas Cowboys were horrible at the time.
Right.
I'm a Cowboy fan, and I will say it. Now, where that downtime come in, because you guys are not coaching, I mean you're not practicing, you're not doing anything. Some things started happening amongst a group of
Yeah, I guess what it was, you just bored.
Mm-hmm.
You was kind of bored because you were on a high, literally on a high. I mean, the Dallas Cowboys, Michael Irvin, they came to our high school. You know, they wasn't out there in Valley Ranch doing all that. No, everybody came to Dallas Carter High School. And so we were kind of on this high. And I guess we needed something else for that rush, you know, and then it was already kind of shown that, you know, our money wasn't no good. We can walk around, grab anything we want, you know, so to speak. You try to pay for stuff, they wouldn't let you pay for it. So, you know, one of our partners just said, you know, he kind of just came up with the idea for whatever reason that, hey, man, you know, let's go do some robberies. You know, and I was like, man, everybody doing no robberies, man, is it crazy? But then, you know, they start coming to school with all this Air Jordan, all these warm-ups, man, and all these shoes. And
you guys playing, like I said, you guys say y'all playing dice.
Yeah, we dice every day. Yeah,
these guys come up with their nice shoes. Like, right. Did you guys start wondering, were they getting paid by boosters or
were they getting because the guys that were coming up like that, I mean, they were just scrubs. You know, they weren't even like players. They were on the team, but they weren't on the team, so to speak, you know. And like we up here shooting dice, you know, we, you know, making $200-$300, you know. But these cats, they coming up and they got on the Gazelle Shades and every different color Air Jordan on the market, every different color Air Jordan warm-up suit on the market. And then they pulling out $700-$800. You know, you're like, man, what y'all doing? You know, so then they kind of hipped us to the game. You're like, okay, cool. Cool. So, you know, I guess one day, you know, me and Derek, we had lost our money. Yeah. You know, we had lost our money shooting dice. And he looked at me and said, man, you want to go make a hit? Let's see. I said, yeah, let's go on and go make a hit.
So now, you say, yeah, let's go make a hit. Yeah. And we speak about it. You guys are getting ready to drive to go make a hit. What's going through your mind as you know, you're a star athlete, you guys got the whole city. And you're driving to do a hit.
So at 17, 18 years old, we weren't thinking like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we weren't thinking like that, you know, and I certainly should have been thinking like that. You know, I've been plastered on the TV for
the last 8 months.
Yeah, so, you know, but I guess, well, once we thought about it, we didn't really do anything that was like right there. Well, if we drove up to a spot, and we saw black people in there working, we didn't do that. Because they gonna recognize somebody. You know, so we did think that much. You know, so we would just find little old mom and pop spots that was kind of like, you know, off to the side, and we just kind of go in there and just kind of, you know, rob them and just come on back out.
And you talk about it, because a lot of you talk about when you guys doing the robberies. What triggered the robbery was the day that you guys was it the Mexican joint?
Yeah.
Ponchos. You guys go in there, you hold up ponchos, you guys, and you guys leave out. Now the same, you guys in the Red Trans Am,
right?
Y'all moving. What made y'all not say, hey, let's go get out this car, let's move? Y'all decided y'all were gonna stop off and get some hair grease.
Right. You know, that's actually just part of this story.
All right, okay.
That's part of this story.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, first of all, we only did one just blind robbery. You know, as far as blind, we didn't know anybody. And then after that, you know, of course, you know, that's where kids work at fast food restaurants or whatever. So we knew somebody everywhere. And so we would be like, say, you know, we're going to give you a cut. We're going to come in there and yada, yada, yada. And that's, oh, yeah, come. They give us a schedule. Well, manager's going to be there. We're going to close the sudden. So we stopped just running in there blind. You know, so we actually had inside help on the majority of them, so to speak. But, you know, just we were just kids, and we just kind of succumbed to I guess, products of our environment. You know, we hung out every day, you know, we shot dice, you know, and I'll never forget this guy in my neighborhood. I used to idolize him, and he told me one day, I'm over there shooting dice, and he pulled me to the side and said, gee, you ain't got no business doing this. He said, you have no business doing this. He said, man, you need to be at the gym working out, getting ready to go to U of H. He said, man, just leave this, quit shooting dice, quit doing everything. I just looked at him like, man, shut up. You know what I mean? Who was taking his money every Friday? Every Friday, he come up there with his check. He'd go home with nothing, you know? So I'm thinking he just kind of hating, you know? But, you know, just hindsight, you know, when you remember about conversations that you had with people were trying to tell you then, you know?
Like you said, you got in the Trans Am, and you said when they pulled up with the lights behind you,
right?
You said, these guys, they for us.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. When they pulled up, I mean, the first thing went through my mind was, you know, the devastation that's going for my parents, you know, my mother, my father. You know, that then I started thinking about, you know, the football there. I started thinking about, you know, the Pat Thomas, the guy recruited me for the University of Houston. You know, I started thinking about PT. You know, I said, man, these guys showed a whole lot of faith in me. And here I am out here doing this, you know. But I didn't, right then, at that moment, I didn't need to be rehabilitated. I was done then. You know, just the embarrassment that I caused on, like I said, on Dallas Carter, on Oak Cliff, on Dallas, on my church family, my parents. You know, that was enough for me.
You guys, like I said, you know, your family, you guys grab you yourself, per se, grab one of the biggest attorneys in Oakland, Forest West, and you guys have to do it. Did he decide for you guys to do that press conference, or did everybody feel that would be in the best interest for you guys to do?
I think he decided. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He decided that you have to show some form of remorse
okay.
for everybody to see.
Okay.
You know, and so that's when we did the big press conference.
And, you know, you look at that press conference, you see the tears in your eyes. But when I look at the 30 for 30 document, the day that they knocked on your door, told your father, he paused on that documentary because he was like, I guess it was hard for him to believe, devastated about it. Man, what was you feeling like, even now, looking at that documentary first?
It hurt, man. It hurt. And I'm about to cry now, but it brings tears to me, you know, seeing that a father's love, you know, just and I'll ever be indebted to my parents. You know, they never said not one negative thing to me through that whole ordeal. Through that, they never said anything negative. They said, "Baby, it's gonna be all right. We gonna get through this." Yeah.
You guys get up to the trial and everything's going on. They wouldn't let it got so bad to where they wouldn't letting if it wasn't mother, father, and siblings, they say they wouldn't letting you in the courtroom.
Right.
When you guys got ready to go in the courtroom, did you feel at any point that you guys were gonna get probation or that they would show some type of leniency? Here you guys are 17, 18 year old guys.
I already knew it because my lawyer, Royce West, he went to law school with the judge.
Oh, wow.
So I had the inside scoop on everything. So I thought, he told Royce, man, look, come in, do your job. He said, if I do send him, I won't give him more than 10 years. You know, he said, that's the highest I'm going to give. He said, outside of that, they're going to get probation.
You hear somebody, you know, 17-year-old superstar, when you hear the word 10 years, what would be?
I was prepared for that. I was prepared mentally for that. I said, you know what? I'd already done the math. You know, at the time in Texas, you're doing a fourth at the time. So I said, you know what? I can do 2.5 years. You know, I can go in there and do 2.5 years. I still got time to come out, you know, play football, go to college, and do my thing. You know, so, but that's what I was prepared for. You know, but then when he started bringing out them.
Rolling out these sentences, I think he hit the boy that was with you, he hit Derek first.
Yeah. He hit Derek first.
20 years.
Yeah, he hit Derek with that 20.
When you heard that 20 years, first come out there, when you said, it's just okay, I'm giving you 20 years.
Yeah.
What went through your mind when you heard him say 20 years?
That's what I think. He said, Derek, you know, I sent you 20 years to TDC. I said, damn, shit, I'm probably going to get 25. You know, I always feel like I'm going to get
worse.
The worst of the stick. You know, I said, damn, I'm going to get 25. You know, then when he finally called us some more guys, then he finally got to me and said 16. I was like, because I'm a math guy. Man, that's 4 years. And I said, well, you know, I immediately said, well, you know what? I'm going to look at that like it's 4 years of college. You know, that I immediately said that in my head.
He called off Keith Campbellson. And
right.
He elaborated on Keith because he said, it's like you are a menace. And I'm trying to figure out the proper word that he used. He said, you're a menace, and I find you scary. Decided to hit him with 25 years.
Right. You know, but Keith caused that on himself.
On himself, okay.
You know, Keith was one of those kids where he wants to be a tough guy. You know, he wants to be a tough guy. He wants to be popular. He wants to be just in the in crowd. And his way of doing that, well, really, he just starved for attention. Any way that he could get attention, he'd do it. You know, so, and then he was in there in the courtroom trying to act hard, you know. He dimmed him as the ringleader.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And I was like, man, it still ain't no, he was nowhere close to a ringleader, but the way you're acting, you're going to get your time but because that's how you are perceived by this judge.
He went to hand them down 20, 16, 25, 12, 15. He went to handing down all these sentences. And then right immediately, they shackled all you guys up to each other. As you guys are walking out of that courtroom to where, I mean, when I looked at it, it looked like they was moving slaves.
That's how they did. That's how they did.
You felt they wanted to send a message to every other young kid in Dallas, Texas, the way they carried you guys out?
That goes all the way back to the football team.
Okay.
You know, that goes all the way, and I blame myself because they looking at it saying, okay, Gary Evans, he just beat the state of Texas.
Yes.
We're not going to let him beat us again. You know, and I can almost promise you that 100, probably 99.9% came from that. You know, these same black kids that came through and ran through the whole state, you know, and we're not going to let them beat us again.
You guys get it. Before they carried you guys out, did they allow you guys to do any hugging on your parents?
No, that's it.
That was it,
man. No, that's it, man. You know, you see your parents, you found your mama and you see over there crying, so you kind of put your head down like, God damn, man. You know, I don't let everybody down. You know, so, but no, it wasn't no hugs and kisses and all that. No, that was just it.
You got, and as they loaded you guys in the van, and when that van door shut, what went through you guys? Was you guys communicating in the van?
You know what? It hadn't even hit. It hadn't hit us yet.
Uh-huh.
And I say it hadn't hit us yet because we were all still together.
Right.
It was like
the next day,
you know. And so we all, and everybody in there just having fun, you know, talking about old time, telling jokes. And then probably about after 2 hours in, we were sitting there. It was like, it got quiet. It got quiet. It was like, God damn, we ain't going to the crib. You know, it got quiet. And I think that's when it kind of ended.
Did they automatically take you guys to adult level, or did they?
Oh yeah, it ain't no discrimination in Texas. You could be in there for a traffic violation. You could be right next to a murderer or a rapist. You know that they don't, you know, categorize you like that in Texas. Everybody's just wherever you end up, that's where you end up.
You guys, when they take you and they get rid of it, and you guys know that you're going to an adult prison,
right?
At 17 years old, and everything is settled in. What was the mood like when you guys knew, hey, this is, we're going to be home? Did you guys at some point say, hey, man, God, oh, we're going to the adult prison. These grown men have been running to.
Oh, yeah, but it took us maybe say 3 or 4 months before that set in. First, they sent
the assessment center?
Well, diagnostic center. Yeah. You go through all that, but then when they assign you to the unit, they put all of us on the same unit. That was a unit called Hilltop, you know. So everybody, I mean, and man, and they just, We were playing basketball every day. We were beating everybody. It was like we was playing football, but we were just playing basketball. You know, we were out there having fun. And, man, I'll never forget that day that Warden and that Major came out there and looked at us. He scanned the whole field, the whole rec yard. He watched us how we was having fun. And probably 2 weeks later, man, they woke us up. They start shipping us all over the state.
Okay. So they start separating.
Everybody go. You go here. You go there. You go there. You go there. And that's when it hits. You know when
you ain't with you guys.
Right. You ain't got your partners there no more. And you know, man, when you walk through that back gate, you know, it's not that it wasn't really just scared, mm-hmm. but it's just fear of the unknown.
Right.
You know, because you never, you know, this uncharted water, you know, so it's just fear of the unknown.
What do you, and you talk about it, you spent four years in there. What do you, if there's one thing that you could say to this generation of young athletes, young kids, what would you tell them?
You know, I do a lot of public speaking, you know, to kids. And right now, most kids, they don't listen. They think they know everything, you know, and one of the words that I use, I say, man, the slickest thing for a black man to do in the system, you in the system. They can do whatever they want to do to you. You know, mom and daddy can't, grandmama can't help you, granddaddy can't help you, your partners can't help you. You know, I mean, and that's a world within a world, you know, and they, I mean, the real you gonna come out.
Yeah. How often did they come and visit?
Man, you know what? Parents came almost every weekend, and I tell people this. You know, I had a support system before I went to prison. I already had my support system in play. How I was gonna be. You know, when I got out after doing 4 years, I got out of prison like. Just the next day, you know, 4 years ago, the next day, you know, I stayed out after getting out of prison. I was already Texas Southern University. You know, my first game was against Steve McNair. Okay. You know, and I got a pit, you know, so you have to have that support system. My parents, my pastor, my high school coach. Say my college coach, actually coaches that even recruited me when I was in high school were there for me, you know. So you have to have that support system, and you just got to have a strong head, you know, strong level minded head. You know.
All you guys, you yourself, you got out and you're doing great things. You have a charity that you're getting ready for change. So you know, we got 2 minutes. How would you sum up your decision-making process from then to now in 2 minutes?
It's a thought process. I think about it, everything I do. I think about the consequences, you know, because for every action, there's a consequence.
Correct.
And you have to be willing to accept those consequences. Kind of think things out before you make any move, you know, and it's you can't be selfish and just think about you because there are people that love you, you know, so you got to think about mom. You got to think about daddy. You got to think about your wife. You got to think about your grandparents, your brothers, your sisters, you know, your coaches, your pastor. You know, don't be so selfish and just to say, you know, I'm going to do this.
So, yeah. I mean, this is why I could have done this interview where you was in Texas and I was here. But I wanted to have you here because I don't think people understand this young generation, as we said. They don't have a clue. Guys, you guys got to make better choices, better decisions, because the way it is now, some of you guys are not coming back. Gary, man, listen, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day, flying here to South Florida, enjoying South Florida, seeing what it is. And like you said, it's your first time
right
here in South Florida, man. Listen, we'll leave here and we'll go get us something to eat. And I'll ride you around a little bit of South right, Florida, let you see what South Florida. Guys, we're signing off here on the Tony Sands Show. It's been great. It's been fun. This educational lesson that we had today, because my shows are normally about sports, but I feel right now this is what young athletes needed to hear, because you can go from here to here, and how you're going to get back here is going to determine your character. We're signing off here on the Tony Sands Show. Man, Mr. Edwards, listen, you're going to hear from us a lot. We're closing out.